This is RSB and the Update, episode 309, recorded Friday, May 20th, 2011. Mining for Latinum. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of RSB and the Update. We're here this week, and we're going to be talking about the Lava Flow Mine and other RuneScape stuff and your questions and pretty much everything. So this week here, we've got Trekkie with us.
Hi, guys. I'm back.
And Tim of The Informer.
Hello, guys. I'm not back. Taking a long hiatus since... I don't know. It's been a while.
Yeah, I don't remember the last number you were on, but...
I was on with the Chief. I know that. I know that.
Oh, so. That narrows it down.
Just a little bit.
So, this week, we've got a week of updates. This was probably the set of updates that was supposed to come out last week, but didn't because of the technical problem that they had with it. So, with that being said, let's get going. So the Lava Flow Mine is a level 68 plus area where you can go mining, providing you've done, what's that quest name? The
King of the Dwarves.
Yes, King of the Dwarves. Thank you, Trekkie, that quest. So before we go into what this thing brings us, let's just say that the XP rewarded for actually mining is less than the Living Rock Caverns. So if you're still looking for the best mining XP, this is not it. The Living Rock Caverns is still where you want to be.
Although it's nice to be able to go AFK for a bit and not worry about it.
Yeah, that's useful.
Yeah, it is nice for a change because, you know, it does have the little side things thrown in, like the animated pickaxes and the boilers that you have to repair, which you get a little bit of smithing XP from. But as Trekkie said, aside from that, it's pretty pain-free mining. You just sit there. You mine the crust away from the lava and that's it, because you don't need to bank, of course, because you just... chipping the crust away. Mm-hmm. So it's not as
though
you
need
it. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to break into song there or something, but that's okay.
I could, but I think Shane would yell at me.
I don't think so.
But... Oy!
So what do you guys think of this from the perspective of a new way to mine?
It's all right. It's sort of fun. I like the outfit that you get. The bonus is like the wood cutting outfit.
Yeah, like the lumberjack.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. I know Trekkie's been going for it. Tim, have you been going for it?
I was trying to go for it, but then I sort of gave up after going for about 4 hours getting nothing.
Okay. 4 hours? Man, I spent 2 days and I got nothing.
Okay, that's nice to know. How much actual time have you invested and what have you gotten then?
Well, near the third day, I managed to get, I think 4 pieces. So, well, third and fourth day, I managed to get 4 pieces. So I'm missing the plate body and the gilded pickaxe. I don't really care about the pickaxe anyway. But basically, it took me a very, very long time. And we have people who say they got it the whole thing in 3 hours. There are people who say, like, they've been here for 3 days and didn't get one yet. So it's... pure luck,
okay.
Which always sucks.
Because going back to the lumberjack took me 9 hours to get.
Didn't Mike also comment that he took him like 40 hours to get the
Mike's
whole thing,
took
too?
Him 40 hours, he said.
I think mine was around that time. But luckily you can't get doubles of the mining outfit, though, unlike the lumberjack.
Yeah, so...
So...
That's kind of annoying, because if you get a piece you already have, then you're kind of... then you're kind of upset, I guess.
For the lumberjack?
No, for the mining one, because you can get multiple mining, right?
No, just no. One.
Oh, okay.
You it basically gives you one piece at a time. Give you boots first, then gloves, helmets, legs, plate body, and your gilded pickaxe in that order. If you have gotten all that stuff and the nymph shows up, she'll give you like 2,500 mining experience for free.
Oh, okay. So, in the order you mentioned there, that's 0.2 XP for the boots and gloves, 0.4 for the helmet, 0.6 for the trousers, and 0.8% bonus for the top. So that's totaling the same 2.5% XP boost. And, you know, these kind of tiny boosts really aren't that worth it if you're just doing a bit of spot mining here and there. When it really does become worth it is if you're going for 99 mining, just like it's worth it if you're going for 99 woodcutting. So if you're going for 99 mining, this might be something to consider.
So you have to think that the top has most of the bonus, and if you want to use your Varrock armor, then
yeah,
you don't get that bonus.
That's true as well. That's a good point. Because everybody is going to rather probably have the Varrock armor over the over this when you're using the Living Rock Cowards, because that speeds up how much ore you get, which is probably better than this, because, you know, 2.5% versus another 60-some-odd whatever for the gold ore. So,
yeah.
I don't know. This update seems like it's a good little aside to mining, but not like a main way to train mining. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, at the time, I couldn't even mine the gold rocks at Living Rocks anyway, so this got me up to 80.
Oh, okay.
So, okay, if you're lower than 80, yeah, it's a really nice place because you're going to stay there for a while and really level up. But I think once you get to 80, you should really just go on the Living Rock if you really want to. And you make some side money, too.
Yeah, you know, also with this, it's worth noting that it's not a constant XP. It's determined by the flow rate of the segment you're in. So 100% flow rate will get you 50 XP, while 50% flow rate will get you 100 XP per crest. So yeah, the trick is finding the right piece. And, you know, there are clan chats for this on the same as the Living Rock Caverns world. So if you're really wanting to go here and mine, you could go join one of the clan chats. And then what they'll do is they'll tell you which piece to go. And then when that piece runs out, you just move to the next one as per the clan chat.
Well, to be honest, if you ever go to any server that has a few people on there, like almost every time I go to any world, it's like around roughly 10 to 20 people at the Living Rocks, not Living Rocks, at the lava mine. You basically, once the thing runs, once the flow changes, you just follow the mob. Honestly, somebody will find it quick, and everybody will shout, "Here, over here, over here," and then you just run. So that's kind of what I've been doing. If I find it first, I start shouting, and everybody starts coming this way.
Yeah, do you know if the chat is a global chat in it? Like, if you go in there and you're on one side, is everybody else able to hear you on the other side, or is it just the same range as normal?
I think it's the same range as normal.
Yeah, I think it's normal range.
Okay.
Don't think the whole thing, and besides, even if the whole thing could hear you, they wouldn't see where the hell you are anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But again, so if everybody's on one side, you kind of get the idea, oh, it should be on the other side, so start running over there anyway.
The liquid gold nymph. Tracky, did that ring any bells to you?
Nymphophilia?
No. Liquid gold?
Platinum?
Yeah.
Nope, not a clue.
Oh, okay. Well, that first popped in my mind when this came up, you know, liquid gold. Liquid and gold. Liquid platinum and then gold.
Okay.
I was just thinking of the time when, you remember Morin when he had stored the
Shane, no Star Trek talk right now, okay? Let's move on. Star Trek talk not allowed.
All right, tweaks and fixes then. This week, they point us directly to the patch notes for the tweaks and fixes, but the main things I want to highlight this week are the fact that they did make that change to clan chat, as they were telling everybody they did. So now you're able to leave a clan chat channel. You don't have to sit in the clan chat channel regardless of whether or not it's being used or not. So that's a welcome change.
Okay, that's nice.
Also, the thing that really was a welcome add-on to me was the changes to the friends, clan chat, and friends chat lists.
No more RuneScape world this, it's just RSI or whatever it is now.
Yeah, that's good, because also, that's something that they needed to do. I think I remember suggesting something like that on the show a while back, but another good thing about it is if you drag the little column size thingy, if you make it large, it will say RS 132 or RS 2 or something. But if you make it small enough, it'll only say the number, which is really good. So that was something they needed to do, you know, because it just makes sense to have that as a kind of user interface type thing. And that I was really proud of them for doing that, because that's something that OS X does in regards to making Windows smart sizes and everything. So good job, Jagex, on that.
All right, cool.
Does anybody have anything else they'd like to discuss in the patch notes?
Just about time.
Okay.
Nope.
It should also be noted that the chairs in the clan camp can now be seated on or sat upon. You can now change your clan name by talking to the clan scribe in much the same way you can change a RuneScape name with the same 28-day limit. The Vexillum now has a teleport to clan camp option, and they have more security options if an owner tries to leave the clan, so that you'll have to enter your bank pin just so that, I'm guessing, so that somebody who gets control of an account doesn't inadvertently leave someone's clan. So that's good.
Okay, and are they still having the whole you have to be there and manually select the person to add them to the chat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they are. I think that's pretty much it in terms of tweaks and fixes this week that I wanted to highlight. So you guys can take a read through that on your own time and note whatever else is interesting to you.
Okay, so moving on to the next thing on our list would be Rogi's Dungeoneering Guide.
It's very basic.
That was the whole point of it.
Yeah.
It's just getting level 33, which isn't that hard.
Yeah, from what I remember seeing is that it was designed for like a newbie guide anyway, so it wasn't designed to be like in-depth, try to get you to 120.
Yeah, you know what I think they're trying to do? I think they're trying to make Dungeoneering more appealing to people, you know? Because if they can make it more appealing to people, maybe people might see that it's an actual skill. I still consider it a mini game, but I don't know. Tim, you're kind of the person in here who has the ideas on Dungeoneering. So, what's your thoughts on the whole mini game versus skill thing a year in?
I just level it up and that's it. If I hit 120, I'll probably forget about it.
Okay, so. But is it a mini game or a skill?
Feels more like a mini game, but
okay.
Well, I just wanted mini games, though.
I just wanted to check that out to get somebody who's over 100 Dungeoneering. It's just as a bit of an aside to see if that's kind of the same thing that's going on, and us lower level people still aren't kind of just confused. Isn't that right, Trekkie?
I'm getting there.
Yeah, you're getting there slowly.
Yeah, I'm getting there. It's no longer my lowest skill anymore.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
it's now tied with construction, and pretty soon it'll be tied with smithing. So we'll see I'll see what Tears of Godthix wants to do.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Okay, so that's the Dungeoneering Guide. Next up, kit out your clanmates for less. This is a promotion going on through their store, so if you set up a RuneScape shirt and you use this promo code that they have here, you buy 4 shirts and you get 1 for free.
How many do you have to buy again?
4.
4 and 1 free. Buy 4, get 1 free.
Yes.
Sounds like a rip.
Well, you know, it's, I don't know. Could be a ripoff. They're $18.90 each.
Yeah.
So you spend probably $75 and you get 1 free.
From what I'm guessing, though, it costs them about maybe $3 to make. The only thing the guy really have to pay is the shipping.
Yeah, and you know they'd also have to put the printing on the shirt and whatnot, because you know they just get the design and then they print it out and there you go. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd wear one of these. Tim, would you wear one?
No.
No.
No. No. No. No. No. No. If I had a little cousin or brother who was playing the game, yeah, I may buy him one for a birthday present.
What about Benny?
He does. He loves Call of Duty 4 too much. What?
Isn't that kind of young for that game?
No, he's okay.
11? That's kind of young for that game.
Well, it's not like I'm... to be honest, we have little kids playing Counter-Strike at, 7 or 8 years old.
For anybody who doesn't know, Benny is his son.
No, it's not, you stupid bimbo. He's my cousin. Don't try to cheat and try to, you know, twist the words around like Fox News. God.
Alrighty, moving on to this poll right now. Guaranteed content poll. What's my name? It's in relation to a new free-to-play quest, or not a free-to-play, it's to a quest monster, a non-combat quest monster. So this is guaranteed content. Winner will be announced on the 27th next week. Going through these lists, Tim, you said when we were talking about this initially that it sounded like Dungeoneering kind of names.
Well, a couple of them do. But, I don't know. They're weird names.
It could be, because there is a quest in the pipeline, apparently, that is dealing with Dungeoneering and is going to be the first Dungeoneering kind of centered quest, so who knows?
Well, that's probably why, then.
So what'd you guys pick for the names?
What do you pick, Tim?
Crackjaw, because that one sounds the least weird.
I picked Lurker, just for novelty's sake.
Because Lurker was something in the first StarCraft.
Yeah, StarCraft Brood War, there was actually a Zerg unit named a Lurker, where it's kind of like the unevolved form of the Roach, I would guess.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I picked Thalassus. I don't know why. I just picked that one because it seems like it's the hardest to pronounce. Thalassus.
Sounds Greek or
it
Latin.
It could sound Greek, but that one's actually winning right now with 3,100 votes, which is weird, so...
Maybe people agree with you. It actually sounds like a decent boss name. Yeah, Death Creeper sounds like a monster from the deep.
And it is kind of hard to say, too. So that kind of makes it sound ominous and bigger than it might be. So,
Watch as the Thalassus becomes like a little like level 5 chicken.
Yeah, better not. But they say non-combat quest, so, you know, what can you do with non-combat, right?
We'll see what happens then.
There's so many idiot NPCs in RuneScape that are non-combat related, like there's, I don't know. You know, it's nice to give players a choice on this, the players get to imprint everything. Like, you guys remember when they chose Aqua Knight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I chose Aquatard.
Aquatard? Like retard?
Yeah.
Is that why you picked it?
Yep, that's why. Anyways. Moving on once again. Jagex celebrates World Turtle Day. World Turtle Day is on the 23rd of May, so on the 22nd and 23rd, the RuneScape community team is celebrating this. And it's a day to acknowledge our reptilian buddies. So they're having a bunch of events with this, so increase knowledge and respect for turtles and tortoises and encourage human action to help them survive and thrive. So what they want to do for this is they want to cover Varrock Square with as many summoned tortoises as possible. And for those that like their skills and activities, we'll be liberating sea turtles from the fishermen's nets in boats of the fishing trawler activity.
Liberating them? Don't you mean more of taking them out of their natural habitat and then basically cooking them and eating them?
Yeah, you know that is a pretty big no, it can't be an oxymoron, but liberating tortoises, I don't know, it's a pretty big contradiction. That's it. So,
While you're at it, we should all go to kill warp tortoise and free them from the evil spells. We cannot turn them back to normal tortoise. We want as well freedom from their suffering.
You know, that would have been a better idea than.
The trawler.
Than going to the trawler ones, because, you know, the trawler ones are just going to get cooked and eaten, right?
Yeah, well, let's see who can cook it first. But, yeah, you know, at least with the warp tortoise, you can actually get some stuff from it, even though there's very little of them in there anyway. And while you're at it, if you're still hungry, you can kill the terror bears and get some free chicken wings.
Alrighty,
those are annoying to kill, though.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I got them blocked on my Slayer list.
I think everybody who has it got it, that thing blocked.
Well, Curadel doesn't assign them, so I don't have them blocked.
I blocked the other things that were Terabirds.
They assigned it to me before. I remember her assigning it to me before.
Never assigned them to me.
That's to me, but okay. But, they're so annoying to kill.
Yep. Alrighty, well, I think that's good for the RS updates for this week, so we're going to move right on to the questions right now. We got two audio questions this week. First one is from a fella named Levi.
Hello, RSBNB update hosts. My name is Levi, and I have a question this week concerning Slayer equipment. As I am aware of, and I'm sure you are aware of as well, the melee barrels armors, Derox, Torax, and Guthan's top, have better armor stats than the highly coveted Bandos chest plates and tassets. I am personally rather strapped for cash on most occasions, and my Guthan's top Torax legs suits me just fine for most Slayer tasks. Yet, I continue to see Slayers wearing Bandos armor. My question is this: should I save up my money to get Bandos despite its lower stats, or do you believe Barros is superior despite being a degradable armor? Thanks for taking my question. Have a nice week.
So, Shane, what do you think?
Just use Barros if you're short on cash, you know, and as you say, the Barros does have better protection stats. The reason people like Bandos is two reasons. First reason is it gives a strength bonus, and people like their strength bonuses. And second, Bandos is just the best armor in the game right now in terms of generic armor that people wear out for combat and everything. So
it is a little bit of a status symbol as well.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you remember when the whip first came out, everybody was getting whips as the main kind of high-end weapon of the day. Well, that's where Barros is right now.
After when people started finding out the whip, everybody, there was like a huge increase in slaying. All the slaying.
Yeah, I know. I remember when the whip used to be 25 million GP. I kind of wish they were still that price.
Well, after they nerfed the special attack, it did kind of just go downhill after that.
Yeah, that's true. I still want that old special back.
What was the old special? Like a.
It was like a mini snare. Uh-huh. Snare. It held the person in place and made the whip hit its max hit, I think.
Yeah, so you pot up like crazy. Like, you can basically one hit a lot of people.
Well, that makes sense for a whip. You know, it's a whip, and whips are painful like that. Right, Tim?
I wouldn't know because I don't own a whip or seen a whip or anything. So.
Okay.
Shane, for old time's sakes, do the whip sound. Again.
No, that's good for today. Thank you.
Oh, you suck.
I did it twice. That's good.
If Barrows works for you, just stay with it. And if you got the money, well, it's up to you. I just use Bandos because, you know, it was decent price at the time, and now it all crashed anyway. So hey, maybe in the future it'll be worth like 1 mil.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, like, for me personally, as long as it does the job it's supposed to do, the added tiny benefits of Bandos aren't enough for me to go out and buy it. So I just use basic armor. I don't even use a Dragonfire shield. I just use the Dragon Defender and Torax and my Slayer helmet. But Bandos chest plate is currently 18.8 million GP. So.
Oh, so that's why you sold me your Dragon Shield.
Yep.
Huh. Okay, then. I was wondering why you were like so desperate to get rid of it at the time.
Well, it's also because it was going to crash. Because if you look at it, Dragonfire Shield right now is only 15 million GP.
Yeah, so is the regular Dragon Shield. That thing's dead. It's not even worth putting it together. Yeah. You find the right piece.
We got a question about that later. Anyways, Tim, what kind of armor do you use?
I think I have full Torag.
Okay, so you're in the same
Bandos boots.
So you're the same. You're in the same camp as me then, as using just basic armor with a little bit extra on top.
Yeah.
All right.
Dragon Defender is nice, though.
Is from Paul.
Hello, Colonel Sanderson and guest. What is the furthest you've gone to get revenge on an enemy? On an unrelated topic, do you have any opinions on OnLive as a gaming platform? I've got a few games on there now, although no multiplayer games so far. It's looking interesting. Thanks. Penknife and Sin, a.k.a. PFK99s, a.k.a. Paul.
Regards to getting revenge, I just prefer to wait until an opportunity arises, you know?
Well, when you say revenge, do you mean against other people or against some NPCs or...
Oh, I was assuming against other people, because I don't see how you could get a revenge against an NPC.
I did. I got a revenge on Hobgoblins in the past.
Okay.
back in RSC, I was in free-to-play, and I thought they were regular level 13 goblins. And the second I got closer, I was like, oh, shoot, I'm in trouble, and I was completely surrounded, and I died. Then I died to them again, and like a month or so later, I died to them again. Because I saw a law rune, I didn't know what it was, so I went to take a look, and I died from them again. The third time, I wanted to try and kill them, but I ended up getting ganged, and I died again. Then I really leveled up, and then I just camped there for like a whole week. I'm killing every single one of you that pops up. I was there for a whole week.
Okay.
I got me a combat level, though.
Tim, do you have anything entertaining as that?
No. I don't get revenge because I have any enemies.
Oh, okay.
I'm a peace-loving guy.
Stupid hippie.
Not a hippie.
I think Trekkie's the hippie living in San Francisco and everything.
No, I'm not a hippie. If I was a hippie, I'd be smoking a blunt. I don't smoke.
Oh, that's good then.
Neither do I.
I have lots of respect for people that don't smoke.
Okay, alrighty. So second part of this question was regards to OnLive. So, Tim, do you want to talk about what OnLive is?
It's almost like Steam, but it's basically Steam, just with less game choices. But you pay for games, I believe, and then you download them and you play them.
It's like a subscription service for games.
My bad. Go away. There you go.
Okay.
My bad.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that, Trekkie. That sounded very authentic. But yeah, that's basically what it is. Is that it's like a subscription service for games, and they're aiming to, according to what Paul provided as background for the question, they're aiming to make it so that you don't need to have a powerful computer to play the game. They just send you the video of it, and your computer displays it, and it uses the internet to communicate back and forth.
Okay, so really quick, what OnLive is a gaming streaming company. What they do is that, so for people who may not have the money to buy an Xbox or PS3 or a nice gaming rig, what it does is you subscribe to them. I can't remember what the price is. I think it's maybe 60 a year or so. I think it might be more. But what they do is you subscribe to their service, and then you buy your game. And what they'll do is, as long as you have a high-speed internet, it will stream the video to you. So you can have your regular Xbox controller, and you're playing the regular game, and basically it's almost instantaneous. There's like very little lag in between when you press the button and what happens on the screen.
Yeah, so you know, I don't think it's going to replace gaming traditionally as, you know, playing the game on your actual computer, because there's not going to be an easy way to do the experience like that. Of course, anything's going to run better when it's on your own computer, you know. So I think it's a good way as maybe like a demo system for kind of games, but I don't think it would be a good replacement going forward for full gaming.
Well, what this is supposed to do is that, you know, for people who may not be able to afford it, they can at least get a nice streaming service.
Yeah, that's
what I guess.
I mean. Like, I mean, if you have a computer, you're not going to be using that, right?
No.
Like, if you have a gaming computer, you're not going to be using it.
But I think the other problem with it, though, is that if you buy the games that they offer, what ends up happening if you cancel the subscription, automatically all the games that you had is completely gone. So even though you paid the $60-something to play it, you basically just lost it anyway.
What's the problem with that, though, if it's a subscription model? It's just like subscribing for music, like the Zune used to do for their Zune Pass or whatever it was called, to get an unlimited amount of songs, and you just get access to that entire library.
Well, Zune sucks. That's why iPod. There we go. Zune was bad.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's like a similar subscription model, and I think subscription models are good because, you know, you can get whatever you want, and it's just, if you don't want, once you're done with something, you just send it back, right?
Yeah, if you say so.
Yeah, I like the subscription model.
But, you know, just be careful. Just remember, know what you're paying for, I guess.
Yep, that's true. All right, Tim, you got anything else before we move on to the next one?
Nope.
All righty, then. I'm going to get you to read the next one, then.
Okay. Dear host, do you believe Jagex will fix the nonsensical price issue relating the shield left half? Which is, in this case, the dragon shield left half. It's a very rare draw with a value of only about 65K. To buy the right shield, you have to have to spend 750K. Setting them together simply does not give you enough XP to make the expense worthwhile. So what do you guys think? I'm going after that.
You want to go first, Shane? Because, oh.
And the end result is you're left with a dragon square shield. It's only worth 300K. I'm trying to decide whether to alk the left half I just retained or hang on to it in the hope that the right half price will be adjusted. Have you found other items with prices so seriously out of whack? Thank you for your thoughts, Jmi Sini.
Okay, you want to go first, Shane? Because I will have a essay about this one really quick.
I just say Alkit. That's all I got to say on this. Because, you know, if you want a dragon square shield, you're going to just buy it off the GE, and it's as simple as that. Like, you're not going to put this thing together and lose money off it. That just doesn't make sense. You're better off on alking what you get. So that's my thoughts on it.
Tim,
I agree with that. Just alk it. It's not worth it. It's been 750K since the release, and I don't think it's going to change.
Okay, so as I agree with Shane and Tim, you should alk it because the price will never drop. I actually have a thread on this topic in the RS official forum, and I've been talking to other people as well, saying that they should really reduce the price of the left half at the Legend Guild. The reason they did not was primarily because when PvP worlds were still active, people could actually get the left half as a drop from killing someone else. Buy the right half as a drop. So basically, people just ended up alking that, and now Dragon Shield is completely worthless anyway. I don't think any shield is worth it anymore now, is it? Everybody is just two-handers anyway.
I'd say the only one that's worth it is the Dragonfire Shield.
Yeah, I guess so. I think some of those chaotic shield might be better, but I haven't checked it out.
But yeah, basically, those are, if you can afford them, but they're mega expensive, you know. And yeah,
well,
Dragon Square Shield.
To be honest, I was talking to my Dungeon 113 buddy. He actually has more tokens that he can figure out what to do with them. He had four.
How did we get onto Dungeoneering tokens?
From you're the talking about chaotic shields.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So near when you get high enough, you actually get it really, really fast. Get tokens really, really fast.
Yeah, I can get around 10K tokens in about 40 minutes.
Okay, so 100K XP every 40 minutes then? Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. And then going back to the Dungeoneering question, that's the same thing. Why aren't there more rewards, Tim? So you can use those tokens to buy good stuff for the real world, you know?
Because they want the tokens to be used to recharge the items.
Yeah, but you know,
you have to choose to pay 2 mil to recharge them, or it's 200K and 20K tokens, just like that. get them recharged.
Well, I guess you'd pay 200k and 20k tokens then. But, you know,
well,
I think I can
do that because I don't have any money, but other people might not do that, though.
But, yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, going back to the question, like, this is the problem with Jagex in general, is they put these updates out when RuneScape 2 first comes out, like the modified Legends Guild with the new prices and everything, and then 7 years later, we're at the same price as when RuneScape 2 first came out in March 2004. Now, that doesn't make sense, because back then, the Dragon Square Shield was a really good shield, and it made sense to have it at 750k, and that was a bargain back then. And now it's worthless. So, you know, that's the problem with Jagex and what they're doing. They need to keep the game moving forward with both the old content needs to move as well as new content coming in. And that's the problem we have with Jagex. So, you know, I don't particularly see it being fixed anytime soon, so just hulk the thing. But I think that's all we got for this one, unless you guys have anything else.
Not really. Basically just hulk it. It's not even worth putting together anyway, unless you want the very tiny smithing experience.
That's true. All right, then. This next one is from Ice Black Dragon. What do you guys think of Jagex demodding Erupt Flail for saying the Artisan's Workshop and Charm Sprites are useless? Link to quick find code and then showing demodded on page 10.
I'm actually there right now. I don't think he got demodded.
Well, you look on the first demodded page, it's green, and then it's normal colored.
Yeah,
she's a form spot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, so, you know, this can go two ways, you know, this goes two ways. First way is, you know, you have to ask, when you become a foreign mod, is there some clause that says you're not allowed to say bad stuff about the updates, like criticize an update as it comes out, or you have to always have a favorable opinion of the updates? If that was something that the person agreed to when they became a foreign mod, then yes, Jagex was in the right to demod them. But, you know, if that was the case, then this person should have known that, and then that's too bad. But if it wasn't the case, and there's nothing mentioned about this, then that's where it becomes sort of gray, you know. And, you know, a forum mod is designed to keep order on the forums, and, you know, it might have been seen as inciting people to be angry and whatnot and causing a disruption on the forums. But, you know, if you think about it, every person who makes a rant or posts something in there has the potential to be doing that, right? So, I don't know. I think if Jagex makes it clear that you're not supposed to have bad opinions of the game when you become a forum mod or whatever, then, you know, that's perfectly fine in their own right to do that. But if they didn't mention that, then, you know, maybe there's something we were missing about why they were demodded, or I don't know.
No, don't know too well. We won't know the true story.
Yeah, so, and you know, as mods of RSBNB, me and Trekkie, you know, we have this thing where we don't talk about offenses in public, which I assume Jagex has something similar to that. And, you know, if people have a problem with their demodding, they're supposed to talk to us in public. I mean, in private, so that's probably the same thing Jagex wanted here as well. So, we can't tell without the full story.
And for all we know, maybe she did something really bad and she's just lying. Who knows?
Yeah, that could be it too. So, I don't know. Tim, you got anything on that?
No.
Okay.
Alrighty. Next one then, Trekkie, you can read.
Alrighty then. Okay, this question is from Majakai One.
It says recently, pronounced Magic One.
Oh, now he's okay. Whatever, Magic One. Recently, I've taken up herb farming for some extra cash. I've been doing Aventoad seeds because they're just as good a profit. But for my arms patch, I've been doing Snapdragon. Even though they don't get disease, I don't get enough herbs from them from there to make a good profit. Is it worth to continuing using Snapdragon, and would you recommend using another herb? Thanks for the show, Magic One.
I'd make sure you're super composting that. But, no, typically I don't use special herbs on the My Arm Trollheim patch. I just use whatever I'm using elsewhere. The only time I use a special herb there is if I've got something like expensive, like a torstal seed. So I just use whatever I'm using elsewhere. So you could probably just go to Avanto there. You know, that patch is kind of just a guaranteed one that's going to survive, and one I use for my expensive herbs if I have any. So that's just the way I use it.
Same here. Just whatever herb seeds I'm using, I just pop it in. I don't use that for anything special. I just use whatever seeds I have in my pack.
So make sure you're using your magical sectors as well. So
yeah,
that's more herbs.
Yeah,
and there's a familiar as well that'll boost the amount of herbs you get. But off the top of my head, I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah, neither can. I don't know if it's a familiar that boosts herbs.
Maybe
I know you can use
then.
The. Yeah, it's the Juju farming potion that boosts it. That's probably what you're thinking of. So, anyways, with that being said, there's two options right there if you haven't used either of those to try and boost it to make a profit off it. So you could try that as well.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, happy farming. And I hope you get a nice green thumb.
Alrighty, I'm going to read this next one from Metal Maniac 9 because it is, I trimmed it up so I need to speak to it. Dear Shane and mystery guests, my country, Belgium, is a bit similar to Canada in the aspect that we have two big communities that speak different languages. For Canada, it's English and French, and for us, Flemish and French as well. To be clear, Flemish is to Dutch as what American is to English. Okay. Then I trimmed out some stuff about what's been happening recently, so I'll have that, and I'll put that back in the full notes for anybody who wants to read it. But anyway, now a year later, and we're still wanting for a government to be formed. The biggest problem is the biggest party in Wallonia is the left-wing party, Socialiste, Socialist Party, and the biggest one in Flanders is the right-winged New Vlaamse Alliance. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. Sorry if I did not. Which translates to the New Flemish Alliance. Like most countries in Europe, we have debts, so we have to cut some spending. Therefore, a big change is required in how the Belgian economic system works, and both parties know that. But because they're so different from each other, they can't form an agreement. It's just not the economic system that needs big changes, but also immigration, healthcare, and so on. On every different issue, both parties disagree with one another. Now the situation is stagnant and will probably have to be so for some time. So I'm just wondering, how is the political situation in Canada between the English and French parties? Is there a federal government or just regional ones? Are there mixed parties or just French parties and English parties? Are you able to vote on French parties? Does Canada have any of the issues Belgium has right now? Sorry for the big explanation and many questions. Keep up the magnificent podcast. Thank you very much, Metal Maniac 9. Well, you know, going up to the level of just general politics in regards to this, you know, this goes without saying that every region has different demands and different desires, and they're going to vote differently as you're describing here, and you know, you end up with this deadlock kind of thing if there's no way that an agreement can be made nationally. And you know, that's the same kind of thing that happens here too. For the last few elections prior to 2011 here, we were not able to get a concrete majority government, meaning the government that was elected had less than 50% of the seats, and you know, which created a situation where nothing could really be done. And you know, in a situation in where we had the economic crisis and everything, that really caused problems. So, you know, it's just something that has to go on in relation to the different people. And you know, basically, what you need is you need some kind of defining moment for everybody to unite around one thing or another, or polarize it more. That's what happened this year in our election. But anyways, going to the general questions here, between the English and French parties, You know, that's not really an issue anymore because the main French party
has four seats left.
Yeah, the Bloc Québécois is the French separatist
57
party.
57 to
4. I think it was 49 before. 49. And then they went down to four seats in this election. So the French party is completely wiped out here now. And in the 70s, the Liberal Party used to be the French party, and it used to be a national party. So, you know, there really is, for the 90s and the first decade of the 2000s, we did have the French separatist party here. But, you know, that now they're pretty much useless. So we don't have there aren't really English and French parties anymore. It's just national parties. Federal government, yes, and provincial governments as well. So Canada's divided into 10 provinces and 3 territories. So each of those provinces or territories has their own government. So there's 2 levels of government there. And, you know, the parties are mixed because they're national parties. And as Tim said, the Bloc here was reduced down to 4 seats. So they're practically non-existent anymore. And no, people in Western Canada are not able to vote for the Bloc because they only ran candidates in Quebec. And, you know, we did have these kind of issues, I guess, that Belgium had because, you know, there was always some kind of in the minority governments, there was always a limiting of whether or not the budget would pass, and there had to be compromise. And, you know, that didn't lead to the right kind of strong budgets that were needed. So there was that during the financial crisis. And prior to that, there was the whole idea of Quebec separatism, English versus French. And then prior to that, there was also something called Western alienation, where the Western provinces of Canada were getting the short end of the stick by the governments that were elected by the dominant Eastern Canada parties. So, you know, that's not the exact same problems, but there were problems like that. So, but that'll be it. Metal Maniac 9, if you have more questions, feel free to PM me. I'd be happy to answer anything else you have.
Yeah, that was a nice political lecture.
Yeah, and I did it without telling anybody to vote for conservatives.
You just
Until
did.
Now.
Well, okay. Yeah, that makes logical sense.
Oh, God.
Alrighty. Trekkie, next one.
Okay, so this question is from Susie71. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm so bad. Hello, Super Barfic, Shane, and Magical Mystical Monsters Mystery Host. I am planning on getting Windows 7 on my Mac. And I was wondering, what is the best way to go about doing this? I am also planning playing the first portal and loving it. Which level do you think was the hardest or the most annoying? Thanks, the man who does Parker.
Parkour.
Okay, parkour.
Well, you know, the Windows 7 Mac thing, the best way to do this is to go to a local store or even online and just buy a copy of Windows 7 Home Premium. And then what you do is you just take that DVD, insert it into your Mac, run the Bootcamp Setup Assistant. It will format the drive. And then once it formats the drive, you just install Windows, and then you're pretty much good to go. That's really all there is to it. And with that being said, Macs make some of the best hardware to run Windows on. There's people that have said that that MacBook Pros are the best Windows laptops that exist.
If you say so. I like my little laptop. And it didn't cost me an arm and a leg to get it either.
Well, that's good then. All right. The second part, Portal. The first Portal. I don't remember the first Portal level, so I can't really say which one is the hardest or most annoying.
I tried looking it up, but all I found was a world record attempt, which is very confusing when you go through it.
For me, though, it was near the end. I think one of the most annoying one was, I can't remember what the level was, but what you had to do was there was a spinning fan and you had to find a way to stop it from spinning, get to the other side, and I couldn't for the life of me figure it out. Turns out you had to portal the gun in the other room to hit the tube with the cube in it. The cube will fall, and you can use it to block or something like that. That's how I finally got it, figured it out. But that was just annoying.
I think I remember that one. Yeah,
that
I
one
played
was
that game last year, so.
That one was the annoying one. But I got, thanks to you two, I got through it. And Portal 2 is awesome. I just need to do all those achievements again.
I finally maxed all the achievements the other day with my friend.
Oh, that's good.
So, 50 for 50 achievements.
Sweet.
And one for one achievement for playing on a playing with a friend on a PS3. You know, that's not an achievement.
So you got 50,
I was waiting
so
for that
54.
Last achievement for the PSN to come back up. And luckily I got it before it got hacked again.
Right, we
yeah, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a bit. So,
just,
anyways, thank you, the man who does parkour. And the last question is from the German. Tim, you want to read it?
Okay. Hello, Shane, and apparently not the hosts. Trivial, I believe, is what the word for it. Question this week: what do you think will be the main idea for the biggest RuneScape update this year? Also, on a sporty note, Munich recently beat St. Pauli 8-1 in the whatever game. I'm not entirely sure. Which brings me to the second question.
Bundesliga.
Bundesliga. I'm pretty sure I butchered that. But which brings me to the second question. What's the biggest scoreline you can remember from any sport? From, or Dank the German.
Oh, the biggest main idea of the RuneScape update this year would have to be making everybody like Jagex again by bringing free trade in the wilderness back. That's definitely going to be the headline of this year, whether it was good or bad.
I still say it was bad, but
me too, actually. I made up my mind, and it was better how it was beforehand.
I knew it. Well, to be honest, my thought is that whole polling system was completely rigged. I bet you all the bot companies was like, oh, just make 3 billion RS accounts, you know? It'd be like J2, J3, J4.
No, you know, it was decided beforehand, because in order to get everything out in the timeline they did, to get it through QA and everything, that would have had to have been in development well before that poll went up. And you don't invest time on something you're not going to do. That's a very bad idea from a programming point of view.
Oh, you remember how long it took to get the Warriors Guild up and running after the poll?
Exactly. See, that's why I said this was decided beforehand. Anyways.
I do wonder why they did it, though. You think it was to bring people back, or you think to inflate
prices? It was just to get more money. That's all it was for. But the biggest scoreline? I don't know. I don't really follow those. Let's see. When was it? There was a score last night when I think Vancouver beat San Jose.
Vancouver beat San Jose 7-3. We destroyed them.
What, the Sharks?
Goal after goal after goal.
Yep.
It's like
okay.
5 or 6 unanswered goals, and then San Jose finally scored.
Yeah, so you know that's probably as bad as it gets, you know. I don't think they've ever reached a score of 10 or anything.
Well, you'll be wrong about that, because at this year's NHL All-Star Game, it was 11-10 for the final score. So it's sort of a write-off game, because they don't try that hard, but
that's the scoreline I've seen
so far.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. For some reason, I was always under the impression that they would cap the game when you reach, like, 10 or something.
Nope.
But, I really can't think of anything that are that big, but you know, I think the best thing to go with would be from last night, as Tim said, the 7-3 win, which is a large amount of goals. So, anyways, thank you, the Jerk Man. Alrighty, moving on to tech news this week. The first story is from the UK. Out of touch and out of date. Laws against copying CDs to be ditched.
Oh, really? That's good to know.
Yeah, see? You know, people always harp on governments, whether it be the UK government or the past conservative government here, you know, about making draconian copyright laws. But, you know, for anybody who actually read any of these copyright laws, specifically the one previously in Canada, it wasn't as bad as the DMCA. And, you know, with this kind of thing happening here in the UK, you know, it just really goes to show that the idea of DMCA, draconian-style copyright laws, are going away because, you know, you have to be a realist in this world. And, you know, people are going to copy stuff from CDs to no matter what they do, right? So.
Oi. I actually have... sorry, Shane, you finish up first before I go.
I was just going to say this is known as format shifting, but go ahead.
Well, I actually have friends who... when I play Guild Wars, who are from the UK, and they actually say that they copy, even though it's considered illegal, they still copy their CDs because they don't want to bring it into the original ones into the car. So they copy the copies are made into their car, and they lose You know, no big deal. They'll just copy another one from the original on their bookshelf.
Why not, right? You own it, so why not? It's just like the same thing. Why can't I take these Blu-ray DVDs I have and legally make a copy of them so I can watch them on a computer or something? Because on a regular DVD, because, you know, not every... There's only one Blu-ray player in this house.
So, yeah. I don't even have Blu-ray in my house.
It just goes
anyway.
To show that... That there needs to be real copyright reform, and, you know, people need to not copy the U.S. and everything will be fine, and that's what the government has to do. But the people need to realize that, you know, if you actually look into these copyright laws, they're not as bad as the critics make them out to be. So next time you hear that something about a supposedly bad copyright law, do some research on your own, get a copy of the bill, and take a read through it. That's what I did last time we had a copyright law here. So.
Okay.
Alrighty, now here's what Tim was mentioning earlier. PSN hacked. Once again.
No surprise there.
Yeah, so this one allowed anybody who had an email address and contact info for a person to change someone's password through the password reset page.
So this is not the new one then?
No, this was this week.
Well, there's actually another one that Paul mentioned about the hacked Thailand site from Sony.
Oh, okay. What was that one?
Well, I'm at the page right now. It's actually Paul actually posted on the forum. So based from here, another successful attack against the company is being reported by security firm F-Secure. A web server used to host Sony's Thai site has been broken into and is now being used to host a phishing site that targets customers of an Italian credit card company. Unlike the PSN and SOE break-in, this hack is not likely to have any serious consequence. It should be restricted to a relatively unimportant web server that has no access to sensitive customer information. So in a way, Sony did once again had a little problem with their security.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that has a PS3. Do you guys?
I do. I know two people that have.
A couple friends.
Yeah.
What are their thoughts on this, Tim?
Sucks. But one friend has an Xbox 360, and he's on that most of the time.
Okay.
And the other friend was... Life was hell for him, because he couldn't talk to anybody. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
This also shows that the shift to communication is shifting toward, you know, game consoles.
Which is a bad thing for us PC gaming types, you know, because Trekkie, you're a PC gamer, right?
Yeah, but we have Skype. That Skype is still superior, but then Microsoft did just buy this thing, so we'll see what the hell they do with it.
Well, they're going to put it in Xbox for sure. I know that much.
Oh, okay. So yeah, we can still talk to the console players.
Yeah, so, you know... just probably if you're on the PSN this time, might be a good idea to change the email address associated with it, change the password, change everything, actually. Change your name to have a fake name.
And while you're at it, move to a new country.
Why a new country?
But, yeah, well, it's probably be easy. Well, I don't know. So you can really throw off any hackers that try to use your information. But, yeah, what I would suggest you do, if you ever do this in the future, make a fake email. I actually have a third email that I use for all the stuff that I don't give a crap about. So it's like, if I have to, like, one of those things where you have to, like, subscribe in order to do a quick forum post or something like that, I always use that email, because if someone takes that one, I don't care. That thing is like, so low on my thing.
Yeah, that's a good point, to use fake email addresses and email addresses you don't really care about for those kind of things, because if you do that, then you've got a little bit extra insurance policy.
Okay, so
if you're on PS3, yeah, be careful. Also, if you're running OS X, be careful as well. There's a piece of malware running around that is aimed to infect you with malware. So the piece of malware is actually pretending to be a piece of software that removes malware, and it's called Mac Defender. So if you run across something called Mac Defender, do not install it. Do not install it. Basically, it's just any kind of normal piece of malware, and it does require your authorization to install it. So, you know, if you install it, it's kind of your own choice, because, you know, on OS X, you do need to enter your password to install something. So that's something to keep in mind. But the main point of this story is that Apple is telling their support reps, both online, on the phone, and in the store, to not aid customers in removing the malware. Which is kind of interesting from Apple's point of view, because, you know, Apple's never had to deal with anything like this before. It's not widespread, but it could be a problem for an uneducated user. And, you know, Apple not doing anything about it is kind of tarnishing their name, knowing what Apple customer support does and how they, to the extent they go to handle their customers. Tim, I don't know if you've had any experiences with Apple support or not. Have you?
Not yet.
But they are pretty good, so I'm a bit surprised as to why they're not doing this. And maybe they just don't want to say that, you know, Mac OS is infectable, but, you know, any operating system is. It's just a matter of the user being stupid enough to enter their password for this kind of thing.
Well,
so,
but a couple of years ago, even Apple started saying that, you know, they were getting reports of viruses on their computers, and they were actually giving out free Norton virus scanners for Mac.
Yeah, but nobody uses one. I've never met a Mac user that uses a virus scanner.
Yeah, but the other thing is, nobody uses Norton unless they had to do it by contract anyway. But I'm thinking also.
Good point.
What I'm also thinking is that maybe they didn't want people to attempt to remove it because they don't want people to know. Maybe it's like, don't tell people that we're getting infected right now. Just keep it on a down low. If this starts getting widespread, we might get into bigger trouble.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you know, the best thing to do if you did get infected with something like this, assuming it wasn't being like a worm and it didn't work its way into your backups, would just be to reinstall the operating system and use Time Capsule or Time Machine to restore to a previous point. So. Anyways, just thought I'd throw that out there. Just so people can say we're not biased towards OS X.
You are, we're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not biased towards OS X. I'll tell you if there's problems at OS X.
Okay,
alrighty.
I believe you.
Other things now. Skill of the Month update. The Herb Blower Skill of the Month. We've got pretty much a tie between Adiv and Brian B. right now, which is amazing, because last week Rodsay was winning when we last checked in with this. So, with that being said, let's break down the numbers. Adiv has 2,293,000 experience. Brian B. has 2,269,000 experience. And Brian B. has just shot up recently, so definitely seeing an increase here. So, race is not over yet, and Rodsay might still have the ability to get some more XP and become a contender for first again with 1.7 million XP. So I'm glad to see that everybody is still racing.
You should have been in it, Shane. You probably could smoke them.
No, I don't have enough herbs for that.
All my XP, except for yesterday, was from her, was from Dungeoneering, just making the potions.
So. Yeah, that's the thing, too, with Dungeoneering, is you can get that kind of XP, but it's really not a training method. You'd agree with that,
no.
Right, Tim?
No. Cost too much.
And that's what they wanted it to be, but it's not. Like, we can talk about Dungeoneering all the time and how it's not a training method for everything. It's just a mini game. But anyways, Tim, share your pick with us.
My pick for this week is Brink, which is basically a class-based first-person shooter that is fun. Think of it like Team Fortress 2, but you have a single player and you have customization of your guns, more than just different guns. You also have an intense online multiplayer in which you basically play through the campaign again with different levels, but instead of having weak bots at your side and versing you, you have actual players with you trying to take out something. So
okay,
it's basically a mixture of Crysis 2 with its parkour kind of movements, because you can bound over objects, stuff like that, with Call of Duty with the amount of guns and the attachments, stuff like that, and Team Fortress 2 with the class based and objective style of play.
Alrighty, so who makes the game? Who's the developer?
Splash Damage, which are known for their multiplayer games.
Okay.
But it's published by Basuda, so...
Ah, okay.
Pretty cool game.
I think they published Star Trek Legacy, didn't they?
I'm not exactly sure.
Legacy sucked.
Yeah, it
did. I'm still pissed that they lied to me.
About?
Oh, they said that if you want to target a specific sub... Oh, no, what is it? If you want to repair your ship, hold down the R button. Or press the forward button on your mouse. And there was no forward... I did not know that I had a forward button on my mouse. I still can't find the forward button on my mouse.
But yeah, you're right. Subsystem targeting, that was never that great. And you know, that's one thing Star Trek Online needs, is subsystem targeting.
Okay, dokie. Let's move on. We don't need more Trek to talk now. Okay, dokie.
And yeah, Basuda did publish Star Trek Legacy. I just looked it up.
Well, that game was so bad.
Okay,
so,
achievements of the week. good bunch this week. first off, NMR799 woodcutting May 17th. Congratulations.
Cool.
Trekkie, we're supposed to alternate, so it goes Shane, Trekkie, Tim.
Okay,
Shane,
so
Trekkie,
Dio, congratulations to Dio for getting a 99 range on May 17th.
They probably got it together at the same time.
Yeah, they
but
did. I was
Maniacs there. Got 99 construction on May 18th.
Jade Gizmo got 99 woodcutting on the 18th as well.
And last but not least, Small Fib got 99 strength on May 19th. So congrats to the five of you. And now work on your next 99 skill.
Yes, congratulations to you all. And a good amount of experience gained there. Yeah, you know, I see people getting over 100 plus Dungeoneering, Tim, X-Blades, other people like that in the high scores, and... You know, I don't mention that because it's not a real accomplishment until you get 120.
Oh,
because you've already got 99, so get 120, and we'll talk about it then.
No, we should have 120 for everything. We should have 120 for every skill. That would completely change the dynamics of everything in this game.
Yeah, it would. I'd be forced to get 120 farming.
Not having I. Be pretty close to halfway to 120 cooking. 65 meal cooking experience right now.
So how much experience do you need to get 120 anyway?
It's about 104 million.
I am not even close to my cooking, but...
Well, I skyrocketed during the 2 cooking skill of the month. From 13 to 32 to 64. Or 65. So... Yeah.
Well, that's interesting how we can go from cooking to getting 120 and everything. So, once again, congratulations to everybody. So, let's start with Tim. What you been doing this week?
Dungeoneering.
Okay.
That's basically been it. That and the level flow mines for a little bit, but then I gave up.
Any real life stuff?
School. That's really okay. It.
Trekkie?
No life at lava mine for like 4 days trying to get the full thing. I still don't have the full thing. Did some dungeon runs with my friends, and I'm less than 300k to 99 crafting. I could have gotten this week, but I wanted to wait a little bit. So already? Shane, shall I go for 99 crafting this Sunday?
Sure. Just don't do it when the apprentice is on, because I won't be able to come then.
You're just stupid. You're fired, Shane.
Yeah. Okay. As for me this week, coding StarCraft. As Trekkie said, I was part of one of the dungeon runs or two of the dungeon runs. That was fun, wasn't it? Kind of.
Yeah. Got a nice little group together. Yep. I actually did one with Mike last night and with two of my other friends, and he said that he was completely lost because he felt like Mike felt like he wasn't contributing to the group because he was just standing there. And I was like, oh, trust me, until you like really dungeon with these two, you felt like you really really feel like that. I felt the same way when I first started dungeoning with them. I was standing around doing nothing. So,
I see.
That's how most people are. Unless you're the Keir or you're getting like an altar or getting potions like that. You just stand around and kill things mainly.
Mm.
Well, that's simple enough.
Killing is always fun.
Aside from that, I got 85 smithing. And that was my major accomplishment for the week. Did it using Addy Bolts.
Addy Bolts? Really?
Yep. And as for the reasoning behind it... It was cheaper than I was able to sell the gold ores and maintain money. Mm-hmm. And I was able to come out ahead in terms of money rather than if I would have just smith those into gold bars. So that was partly why there. And as for the number Y85, I got 85 because if you use a stew, one of the stews, you can boost up to 91 and you need 91 to make the crossbow limbs for the RD Elite Diary.
Oh, yeah, I did not think of that.
And I did that when I was going for 87.
Yeah,
I had 100 and, or no, 900 and some ceiling creation points, bought some ceiling creation hammers, made some mithril plate bodies, quickly got 87, then I did the achievement diaries.
Yeah, I would have done ceiling creation, but I just didn't want to because it was such a short amount of XP, so...
Oh. Well, I had those banked, so I don't even know where I got them from. Just been sitting there for about a year now, I think.
What, your myth?
No, the ceiling creation points.
Ah, okay.
Oh, okay. Alrighty then, I think that pretty much means we're done for this episode. I don't think there's anything else we have to mention.
What's happening? Oh yeah, tomorrow. If the world ends tomorrow, have fun on our last day on Hell.
Okay. That being
said, I'll be bowling then, so I hope I'll have fun bowling if it's the last day.
Well, if it's the last day, if tomorrow will become the last day, do things that you would never normally do.
Like watch the Star Trek movie marathon on the Space Channel here.
Right. Actually, Shane, you should, as the last day in Hell, you should watch the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, so I'll only
do that if Mike watches Star Trek movies.
I thought he did.
No.
Okay. Well, I'll force him next time.
But in any case, that's been RSBMB Update 309 with Trekkie and Tim. Thanks for listening, and we will see you guys all next week. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, guys. Take care, and stay safe, stay alive.